Life is described in so many different ways that we can be confused as to what it really is. Life is a game. Life is a journey. Life is a test. Life is a puzzle. Life is a school with a series of lessons. Life is an adventure. And on and on. Certainly, there's a lot of learning in life, so the more effectively we learn effective lessons, the happier we can be. So maybe life is a school. But for some people, life is about suffering, so the idea of being happy is not even available to them. That's not part of their plan. To me, I would interpret this perspective as indicating a need for more information about other possible perspectives about life. Is life just about suffering? I don't think so. When an infant shows signs of no learning or slow learning, parents and families and medical people become very concerned, because it's really recognized that learning goes hand in hand with growing, and it's essential to our ability to live a full life, a physical life, an emotional life, a mental life. When we see children playing with toys, I think back to the days of Lincoln Logs, but now there are Legos and a whole bunch of other kind of toys that people can handle, that infants and children can handle, blocks and so on. We recognize that there seems to be a natural tendency to want to build things, to take piece A and connect it to piece B and connect it to piece C. So building seems to be a natural part of life. So maybe life is about building. Life seems to build structures too, which is maybe a very simple way and superficial way of describing the way our bodies assimilate the components from foods. They take the food, digest it, and then they use those ingredients to build bodies. As infants, either before we're born or at birth or thereafter, when we're small, we don't really think about consciously building our bodies. It occurs just naturally. Seems to be designed into living things. Later on, we can make the conscious decision to work out, to exercise, to use nutrition and so on in order to build our bodies into a certain shape. Building our existence involves this natural growth on a physical level, but it also occurs on a mental level as we assimilate information and images, inputs, environmental signals from around us in an effort to build our identities. That is, to establish who we are. When we identify images, and if we take ownership of the meanings of those images, then it's almost as if we're picking up a mosaic out of the air or off the table and saying, this is me, this is me, this is part of me. And we add that to the structure of our identity. We can see that we have a tendency to gravitate or attract or resonate with certain energy patterns, certain mosaics, if you will, and we think in terms of those. No, yep, that's me, that's me, no, that's not me, that's not me, yes, this is me, nope, that's not me. And we pick and choose based upon who we think we are becoming. And I'd like to say that I believe that identities is an ongoing process that never ceases. We're constantly adding and subtracting, adding and removing pieces as they belong to us and no longer belong to us or don't belong to us in the first place. And as we start to assimilate these energy patterns, there is this natural attractiveness to other energy patterns of a similar nature. So we think we're this way. This is our identity. We will notice other images, other vibrations, other energy patterns that fall in line with those. They resonate. They're similar to, and we attract those. As birds of a feather flock together, kind of an idea. Life is a lot like our relationship with food. So life is about eating? Perhaps. Is it about taking in energy? I think so. It is this idea, let's explore it for a minute. We look for foods that are in alignment with our needs or desires, and then we take them in. Sometimes we may want food that's good tasting. Other times we want food that is nutritious. We want fast food. We want cheap food. We want easy food. We want elaborately paired, elegantly served food. We can eat food to stay alive. We can use it to stave off hunger. We can use food to satisfy urges. We could eat for enjoyment. We could eat as if it were a sacrament, showing how blessed we are by God, earth, water, and sun. So there are a lot of different ways to be involved in this energy acquisition, this energy ingesting process. Crudely, we may be like earthworms. Earthworms churn through the soil. Whatever they use for their bodies, they use for the bodies, and the rest comes out the other end as waste product. For humans, we take in a lot of food energy, we use some, we store some, and we excrete some. An important point is, unlike the earthworms, we take in mental energy, spiritual energy, emotional energy, not just physical energy. We take in visual images, we take in audio images, we take in smells and tastes and touch, we take in thoughts, and we take in emotions, and we take in other senses. When we take these energy patterns in, we use some, we hold on to some, and we let some go as not belonging to us or not serving us. If we hold on to thoughts and emotions and images that are not really ours and don't really serve us, we become unnecessarily encumbered by weighty energy in our lives. If life is a journey of unfoldment, then we will want to accept the idea that we will and can, and actually is more efficient, to slough off energies that no longer fit, that don't serve us, and perhaps were never ours in the first place, were given to us intentionally or, more likely, unintentionally earlier in our lives. In this learning, growing process of discovering who we are, we have undoubtedly assimilated other people's thoughts, their feelings, and information about life and self that is false. It constantly amazes me how, in conversations with clients, information that seems to have been derived from their pre-birth existence, that is when their physical bodies were developing in their mothers, recording environmental signals through that time. Seems kind of amazing that those imprints, those inputs, affect the person then and throughout the course of one's life, unless they are shifted by other inputs or are sloughed off as no longer serving. Because there's a lot of motion in life, we could say that life is a journey. Along the path, we have experiences that we can use, and we do. We use it to build our book called Rules of Life. And we'll have thoughts and feelings and physical sensations throughout this journey. We keep adding new rules, not only those that we are taught, but those that we intuit, those that we conclude on our own into this book, and keep adding rule after rule after rule. If life is a journey, how do we find our way? The simple answer is, know who you are, where you are, and where you are going. The line, straight or wandering, between where you are and where you want to be is your way. Personally, I'm more inclined to a more complicated answer to that question. Knowing who you are, who we are, has to take into consideration that many people are going to seek to tell us who we are, what we should and shouldn't do, what we should and shouldn't be, what we should and shouldn't have. I think the first step in knowing who we are is to know that we are unique, one of a kind, different in important ways from every other person who has ever lived, who's living now, or who will ever live. Since we are all unique, we're much better off not comparing ourselves to other unique people. It is always going to be an apples to orange comparison, and it doesn't serve us. Are we unique? Some people go, I'm not unique. Well, let me ask, who has walked in your shoes, had your thoughts, had your emotions, received the inputs you have had, had the same environment, had the same environmental signals, had the same parents with the same level of awareness at that point in time, and who learned or mislearned the same things as you have? No one, ever. We are unique. One of the pressures that we're going to experience throughout life as we try to find our way, as we try to navigate the journey of life, as we try to live our lives, is the pressure to be the same as others. This occurs in families, schools, churches, and among friends. Be the same in order to belong is the emphasis. Sometimes it's spoken directly, sometimes it's subtle. Be the same in order to belong. Unfortunately, that statement is contrary to our natural urge toward freedom, autonomy, and our uniqueness. If we buy into that, we are setting ourselves up for some internal conflict and frustration because of violating what is natural to us. Finding your way starts before the first step of the journey even takes place. Finding your way takes place during the journey with every experience, every step, every energy exchange that occurs over the course of that journey or life. Now, we all recognize that it's a common experience to walk on sidewalks or stepping stones or tiles that mark an appropriate path. These devices are used, and for convenience sake, they're social conventions. They aid people to make their walking easier, and also, on the other hand, to confine their walking to specific routes so they don't wander on the grass or they don't go through some area that is deemed to be inappropriate. In other words, these paths can serve the purpose of keeping people on the straight and narrow. On roadways, there are signs, traffic lights, and other markings that facilitate the flow of automotive energies of vehicles that we call traffic. So, what signs or indicators do we use to find our way when the markings don't physically exist? What do we look for? What do we look at? I suggest that we use ideals and emotions. Ideals are those images we hold on to as being of the highest value to us. We use them like North Stars that we can navigate by. Emotions are those indicators that tell us when we're on track, in harmony with our intentions, with higher vibrations, it's better feeling. Emotions show us when we are off track, the feeling is less good, doesn't feel as nice, doesn't feel as comfortable. We're not as happy. Feeling good means we're more on track. And relief is that instantaneous feeling that indicates that we've just moved more on track than we were a second or so ago. Emotions can be used as indicators that tell us when it's time to adjust our thinking, that is, our attentional and intentional direction. Where do we get ideals? We learn them. We're taught them. We see them. We resonate with them, and sometimes we're forced to accept them. In the end, because of our uniqueness, we not only have the right, but we have the responsibility to notice the ideals that we've seen or heard or been taught or we've even imagined as the finest characteristics that we would like to have as ingredients in the life that we're creating. This is how you can do it. We can do it by noticing who has demonstrated virtues that seem appealing to us, that we want to have as our own. As children, this happens with television, with books, with comic books. But as we get a little bit older, we can recognize Jesus the Christ, other masters, saints, heroes, successes, people in our immediate environment, our parents, if that is an appropriate example, or others. They are the demonstrators of ideals that we can resonate with and become. Finding your way can be encumbered by consequences or judgments. Most of us all accept the idea that these concepts of cause and effect, action-reaction, action-consequence, and others. Action-consequence is absolutely essential to our learning. It is how we learn. If we can perceive the consequences as we mentally think through the action, sometimes that serves us better. Sometimes we don't learn from that, and we physically have to have the experience and then have the consequence and learn the lesson. We learn from that. One of the challenges, of course, as a parent, and I think all parents would recognize this, is when we try to explain to a child, let me tell you the consequences of that. Let me tell you what will happen if you don't. Let me tell you what will happen if you do. Is the child cannot relate to that and just ignores that advice and needs to have their own experience in order to learn from it. Experientially, they've got to participate in that action consequence formula. Some of the consequences that we're exposed to are institutional. And so on, governmental laws, that sort of thing, policies, procedures, regulations, and they're supposed to serve the greater good of society, of an organization. But sometimes when we do a close examination, we can see that these rules and procedures and laws, violations and the punishments associated with them, are actually designed to serve the few, not the many, and the good of the few versus the good of the many. So, we have a need to make those evaluations for ourselves. There are many people, myself included, who have versions of good that we promote. We have beliefs that we would like to live by, and we would like others to live by, because we think this would make the world a better place, make people happier, healthier, and so on. There are lots of us doing this. But an individual has the right and the responsibility to make these determinations for him and herself. Fearing consequences, fearing judgment, are two normal but very distracting habits and tendencies, more of a primitive level, that we have that pulls our attention away from the ideals of where we want to go, where we're trying to navigate, what we're using as guidelines and milestones and signs, and puts our attention on the primitive aspects of avoiding pain, of not making mistakes. Even though that structure, that paradigm, that scale of measurement of mistakes is largely shaped by other people in a culture. It's not an individual decision. It's a cultural decision that we walk into. So where are we going? Where does our way lead? Besides the ideals and emotions, what label could we give to our way so that when we find it, we know what the name of this path is? Many of us have been taught through our religious upbringing that our role as human beings is to, quotes, know, love, and serve God, end quotes, to know, love, and serve God. It's amazing how that can be interpreted so that there are people all over the planet who are extinguishing the God in another person at the same time that they think they are serving God by doing that. I suggest this variation. This is our way: to know, love, and express the God within, the Christ within, and to recognize, know it, love it, and help others to express the God, Christ within. To know, love, and serve God, and kill human beings, and destroy the earth, is schizophrenic. To know, love, and express the God within, and accept that God within exists within other living things as well, particularly human beings, makes much more sense. How you know, how you love, and how you express the Christ within is up to you to discover in your unique way. It will be unique, and it should be unique, in as much as you are unique. I would like to end the service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the Creator and connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for your Spirit flowing to us and through us, giving us the ability to think and feel and to act. Thank you for helping us to grow in awareness of the importance of making connections to you and to your other creations, people and other living things, including the earth. help us to know exactly what it is that we are, who we are, how to be most fully what we're capable of being, and then to express it. In your honor, and in fulfillment and joy and love and happiness in our daily lives. Thank you. It is so. Amen.